Welcome back to part two of our interview with writer, programmer, and entrepreneur Derek Sivers. This week we talk about the daily practices for increasing self-knowledge and many different ways in which people can thrive and find fulfillment. You can find all the links and show notes for this interview at futurethinkers.org/117. And a quick announcement, our giveaway contest is continuing into the third round. You can enter to win 6 months worth of a Future Thinkers membership and 1 month's supply of Qualia nootropic energy. Just go to futurethinkers.org/giveaway to check that out. Hey, and welcome to futurethinkers.org, a podcast about the evolution of technology, society, and consciousness. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yuvia Ivanova. If you're new to the show and you want to get a list of our favorite books, popular episodes, and to join our community, go to futurethinkers.org/start. You're working on another book right now that's called How to Live. And it's interesting to me, actually, in context of everything that we've spoken about so far, that your approach to life is in some ways unconventional and probably rubs a lot of people wrong because it goes counter to how a lot of other people operate and a lot of their expectations. So in that context, a book that is titled How to Live is particularly interesting. So can you dig into what that's going to be about?
It is not what you expect. It is so exciting. If you had to make me pick my favorite single book of all time, if you said, no, not top 10, pick one, it would probably be the book Sum, S-U-M, by David Eagleman. It is a tiny, creative, fascinating book. Its subtitle is 40 Tales of the Afterlives. And what he does is, the format is fascinating. It's basically every chapter is answering the question, what happens when you die? But it's answering it in a radically different way. And each chapter is standalone. Like, it's each chapter deliberately conflicts all the other chapters. So it'll be like, chapter 3, when you die, you're surrounded by a bunch of thuggish little creatures looking at you saying, what is answer? What is answer? And you find out after a while that what you knew of as your life was actually an artificial intelligence program. You are an artificial intelligence program that they wrote to go figure out the meaning of life. And now that the program has stopped running, they're trying to get the answers out of you. And so you try to tell them what you learned about life, but every time you tell them, they just look at each other and furrow their brows and say, what is answer? And you realize that were we to write an artificial intelligence program smarter than us, we would be too dumb to understand its answers. That's it. That'll be like one chapter. Then the next chapter will say, when you die, you're greeted by a handler that tells you in your last life, you chose to be a man. But once again, you can always choose whatever creature you want to be. Every time it's your turn to live again, you get to be whatever creature you want. So you remember a wonderful day you had once as a man watching a horse grazing in a field, and you admired its simple life, just eating grass in a field. And you say, you know what? I'd like to be a horse. No sooner said than done, you start to feel your arms change into legs and your hands turn into hoofs and your neck lengthens and your muscles are changing. But then you start to feel your brain turning into a horse's brain. And you realize that you're starting to forget what a man is. And you realize, oh no, what I loved was being a complex man, appreciating the comparatively simple life of a horse. But if I don't even know what a man is anymore, I won't appreciate my simple life. You think I've made a horrible mistake, and you try to say, wait, but all that comes out is, and at the last minute before you completely turn into a horse, you have a horrifying thought, which is, I wonder what kind of beautiful, complex creature I must have been before that chose the simple life of a man. You know, and like every chapter is like that. It'll be like chapter 7, when you die, you find out that yes, God was in fact the creator, but he's not a manager. He created us billions of years ago. He knocked over the first domino and he's off doing other things. He doesn't even know we exist anymore. You know, so I just love this format of 40 different answers to one question. So 2 years ago, I was like walking down the road and I suddenly was like, stopped in my tracks. I was like, oh my God, I want to write a book called How to Live. Like 25 different answers to that one question. Each chapter deliberately conflicting the others. Each chapter completely convinced it has the right answer. Persuasively telling you that, no, this is the way to live. And then the very next chapter will completely go against it. Because that's honestly how my mind works most of the time. So it's like, you know, one chapter will be, here's how to live. You must be fully independent. All misery comes from regrettable commitments to things. So you must at all times be completely free and independent. You must be free of all technology choices. You know, yeah, everything is emulated, all free of all commitments and relationships and this. And it'll be a chapter that's telling you like how to be completely independent. And you just follow that to the logical conclusion. And, you know, then the very next chapter will say, here's how to live, commit. You need to pick a place, pick a person, and all the deeper joy in life comes from commitment, et cetera. And so I couldn't come up with 40 to match the book Sum. So my book is definitely an homage to the book Sum, but I came up with 25 different ways to live, and it's a blast to write because I actually believe in each one of these 25, and they're deliberately conflicting. And
So cool.
So that's what I'm writing right now.
That's great.
How many of them have you tried?
Oh, God. I don't know. Good. I'll think about that. I don't know the answer to that. It feels like most of them at some point, you know, I told you that I like whimsically got married because I'm like, commitment. That's what life is all about. You just pick, you commit. It's the joy of missing out. You get pride in all the choices you're not making. And it's like, did that for a few years and until I didn't. And yeah. I've gone all the way off the independent side. I've gone all the way to the learning and growing. Like learning and growing, that is the most important thing in life. And if that's the most important thing in life, then it logically follows that you would live as such. And so I'm also, it's written in, of course, you know, a very succinct format with what I call directives that we can talk all around a subject. We can talk for many paragraphs around it, or you can just say two sentences that say, do this. And I actually think that it's like the entire tree is contained in the seed. And sometimes I think the directive, just telling somebody without precursors or apologies, saying, do this, is like the seed that carries all the other philosophies with it. The action is what really matters, rather than all the talking around it. So it's written in a laughably direct, do this, live like this, marry this kind of person, live in this place kind of format, because it's just more succinct and amusing instead of babbling on about things.
That's interesting. And especially given the context that a lot of them are completely contradictory, it might produce this meta insight in people that, yeah, there are all these different options, but if you're not doing it, then it doesn't really matter.
Right. Anyway. Yeah. Yep.
I like that it's absolute in this relative kind of format. Like it's absolute in every single chapter, but then the next thing contradicts it. So I would imagine that relates to what you were saying, this relative meta insight that you would get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool.
And it's at first I thought that I was going to need a really damn good conclusion, like to wrap it all up. But then I thought that that's the difference between art and instruction. It's like when you kind of think of something as art, then everybody's just free to make their own conclusion. If you're thinking of yourself as a professor, then you're trying to, you know, tell people what to think. So I've decided that this is really more of an art project than I'm no professor. So there is no conclusion.
Never conclude. That's the final rule.
Never conclude.
Never
and
conclude.
And so concludes our interview. Should we end with that?
Yeah.
It's interesting, actually, because this loops back to that idea of leaving space. And if you leave space, then something else can emerge. So if you have a very specific conclusion, then it doesn't leave space. But if you leave it open, then all kinds of insights can emerge for people, and it might be totally different for different people.
Yeah, it's fun, the idea of somebody saying, like, and just the thought of somebody saying, what did he mean by that? That's more interesting than me telling them exactly what I meant by that.
Are you at all thinking about what kind of legacy your work is going to leave in the world?
I think that, I don't have any spiritual beliefs really, but I think that our personality lives on after we die in the things that we create. Like, if there's any argument in favor, like, something that we could concretely, objectively call an afterlife, it would be like the way that you share your personality while you're alive. So it's like, right now I can still go read things written by people that are dead and totally get their personality, their way of thinking, their framework. And so to me, they might as well still be alive. That's what's weird when people get all, you know, upset that Ray Charles died or something. I'm like, really, well, how many of his albums have you bought in the last 20 years? No, I mean, his new music, none. So why, he didn't, the man you didn't know died, but it doesn't matter because the things he created are very alive. So I don't think about, I don't like worry about my legacy like that, but thinking that thought that I just described is the kind of thing that kicks my ass a bit, eustress, right? Towards sharing more of my thoughts and ideas. And I use my site for that. Like, to me, my site is the legacy. Like, anytime I'm doing anything on my site, I just imagine, like, this will be around for 100 years after I die. Another reason why, you know, it's not on WordPress, and the less code, the better, because, like, future somebody is going to have to maintain it. So I just use bare bones HTML, because who knows what holographic devices this will be seen on in the future. And, you know, they might not have JavaScript. Anyway. Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting.
I think long-term to a fault, like when I said earlier about the tattoos, like, you know, it's like, even at the age of 14, I was like, I might not want tattoos when I'm 80. People are just looking at me weird. Like, dude, why are you thinking about being 80? I was like, well, it's coming. So I don't know. I just often think of everything very long-term like that, to a fault.
It's strange to me that you say you're non-spiritual and yet you have so many spiritual practices that you engage with.
I don't know. I mean, they're practices, but I mean, I haven't looked up what the word spiritual means, but it seems to be about like a spirit, like a, and spirit being like synonym for ghost, right? Like, it's belief in some like entity spirit thing. And I don't have that. So I don't know what you would call it.
I think it really comes out of that, what we've already discussed, this, you've given yourself time to contemplate things that others have contemplated when they've had time and have come up with some great ideas and really figured out how exactly you want to live your life. I mean, that's what, in my mind, what spirituality or what religion is all about, is how to live.
Cool.
Hey everyone, just a reminder that the registration for our membership area closes on the 23rd of this month. If you want to check it out, get access to the courses and the group calls and any other events and workshops that we're doing, we've got a lot of them coming up. You can check that out by going to members.futurethinkers.org.
I wanted to ask you about how you approach self-knowledge. How do you investigate kind of yourself and your beliefs? And you mentioned identity before. Do you have any specific practices? Do they change with time, or do you kind of have your go-to practices? Can you talk about that a bit?
For me, it's just lots and lots and lots of writing in my journal. I just do everything in just text files. So I type really fast and free, and some people enjoy longhand, but to me, almost every day, I open up a text file, and at first I just dump out whatever's on my mind right now. But then I like to skeptically challenge everything I just said as a fact. And so if I said, like, such and such is a bad idea, then I'll kind of go back and add a question mark to it. Like, is it a bad idea? Why is it a bad idea? What if it's not a bad idea? What would it look like? Like, I like to do the skeptic thing of doubting everything I think I hold true. Try doubting it, see how that looks. What if it were false? What is the opposite? What are the other possibilities here? And then there's always the idea of pushing past the first few possibilities. Like, we often think in terms of two choices. We often think in terms of choices, but once we get to two choices, we say, okay, well, now I have to decide between these two choices. And it's like, oh, okay, no, never stop at two choices. You can always add more. There's always the choice of do nothing, go crazy, you know. There's always more choices. And then you could start to look at a spectrum of choices. So self-knowledge, I just do this kind of stuff every day. I just put aside time. I guess it helps that, like, I don't do a lot of stuff that normal people do. I don't watch videos of any sort. I just generally don't watch things. Just almost any moment I'm awake, I'm writing or talking or reading, and that's it. I don't watch things. I don't hang out. I don't, like, sit on couches and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I guess the if it seems like I'm weird in the stuff that I do, it's just time that maybe normal people would spend watching things. I tend to spend writing.
I'm curious how your ideas about minimalism and your philosophies for living have changed once you had your child.
Can you see the Lego back there on the table? When he was up until he was about 2 years old, I kind of held my minimalist philosophies applied to parenting. He had no toys. We would go outside and play with sticks or rocks or whatever, and that's it. And then when he was he was 2 years old, we were living in New Zealand, and I went to a cafe in Masterton that had a huge box of toys. And he saw this box of toys, and he just sat there and played with everything for 3 hours. Like, I didn't interrupt him. I just sat there for 3 hours, just kind of ordering a second and a third cup of tea and just watching him play for 3 hours. Like, oh my God, he's in heaven. And it's like, okay, I've made a mistake. He needs toys. Like, this is clear. So that night I went on to eBay and found somebody in Wellington where I was living that was giving away like 3 or 4 huge boxes just filled with toys for like $10. And I was like, okay, I took it and just presented him with 4 giant bins of toys. And for the next 5 years until we moved here, he just played with that giant box of toys like every single day, never got tired of it. So that was a good lesson that kind of like the beginning when you asked me about hell yeah or no, that's a certain tool for a certain situation. Minimalism is a certain tool for a certain kind of desire, for a certain kind of situation. It's not the answer to everything. So we should, you know, question all of these isms, including that one. But they're tools. We don't need to think that just because something is true for us now, that it is true for everything. It's the answer. It's like, no, it's just a tool for now. So I don't apply most of what works for me in my life. I don't apply to his life. I don't try to push it on him because I know that it's not what he needs.
You know, this conversation of state versus process has been coming up a ton lately in the last few weeks for us. And I'm recognizing as you're talking that this is actually something you're doing too. You seem to be deeply committed to processes, but the process of changing processes and using processes to uncover what's working and what's not. And you seem extremely, to use your words, disloyal to states. You're not trying to get something, be something, you know, have a check mark on a to-do list. Like, you're not looking at states at all.
I think, you know, we talk about commonly known spectrums like introvert versus extrovert. But there are all these other ones too. Like, I remember reading once that there's a spectrum of how much we tend to find similarities versus find differences. Like, that's something that there's a spectrum, and they have some kind of name for it in psychology that they can measure it. They can ask you some questions and say, oh, you're a similarity finder or you're a difference finder. And I read that one of these spectrums is being process focused versus goal focused. Mm. And the cliche of the person that is process focused is doing something almost to completion and then going, that's enough. Like, I was doing it for the doing, not for the end result. Mm. And so, yeah, I remember years ago when I took one of those tests, like, that was totally me. I will very often do something almost to completion. Then I'll feel like, yeah, I got the benefit I wanted. I was doing it for the doing. I didn't really care whether I got to the finish line or not. I mean, that would be kind of a fun little skit about, like, the process focused person running a marathon, and then right before you get to the finish line, just walking off, like, just like literally a few feet before the finish line, just going like, I'm done. That's cool. I'm just like, I don't need to cross it. I was just doing it for the running.
Especially if they were first, that'd be really hilarious.
right. Nah, good enough.
That's gotta be the 26th and 7th lesson in your book. Never complete anything. Never conclude and always conclude.
Well, there was, one of them is about reinvention, and it is kind of like that. It's saying that we always, it's beginner's mind. It's when you're with your beginner's mind, when you're new to something, that's when you make the best progress. That's when you get all the new insights and all that kind of stuff. So living in the name of reinvention, you stay a beginner at everything. And as soon as you be enough of an expert, time to reinvent, pick something completely different and do it again. But,
cool.
Yeah. Wait. I think I was just going to make another joke about the marathon. I know what it was. When I was living in Singapore, I was living in this building that was right above. It was like right above, like, the Central Park kind of thing in Singapore. It was Marina Bay, and that's where they would do all of, like, the marathons and the races and the triathlons would always begin, like, right below my window. So very often, at like 6 a.m. on a Sunday, I'd be woken up with, like, and I just look out the window at, like, all these people, like, organizers with clipboards and everybody with the numbers on. And I just think, you know, you could have run the same 10 miles yesterday just by yourself. Like,
in the woods.
Yeah, why would you choose all of this noise and screaming and commotion and the numbers and the clipboards and the walkie-talkies? Why not just do the run yesterday? And I said this to somebody who looked at me and said, you know, some people like being around other people. All right. Yeah, that's my introvert thing. Like, everything's better alone. Yeah, anyway.
And some people like structure.
Yeah.
And organization. And
the goal focused versus process focused is, if you're goal focused, then it's, like, really important to you that it's like, I did the marathon. I was number 37 and I came in whatever 19th place of that marathon. It's like really important. Goal focused people want to show that they achieved that goal. And it there was a guy that beat the world record, ran the marathon in under 2 hours just last week or something. But they say that it doesn't officially count because he did it by himself. Like, he did it, he had pacers running with him. But because it wasn't an official marathon that had other contestants, it doesn't count for some reason.
What?
Yeah, he did it anyway. But it's like, because it wasn't a competitive official marathon. And he knew that. He said, well, I'm doing it anyway just to show that in ideal situations, a marathon can be run in under 2 hours. We've proved it now. And so I hope others will now, you know, like, once Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile, like, 10 other people did it the following year, even though it had never been done up until then. So he said, I'm doing it for that reason. You can tell me it wasn't official. It doesn't matter to me.
Huh.
Metaphors. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just the kind of thread of this conversation. It's interesting that life and living things, just there's such a variety, and that there are so many different ways that living beings can thrive. You know, like some creatures are, you know, more adapted to a certain niche, and there's maybe less variety, at least within the species. But then there's another species living somewhere else that's doing something totally different, you know, like different kinds of finches or whatever. But humans are fascinating in the sense that we are so versatile. There are just so many different, you know, modes of being that can make people happy and fulfilled. And even in your book, you know, about how to live, you're presenting so many different kind of ways that, or pathways that people can take. And even just that realization, I think is really interesting for people to ponder, especially if they're feeling stuck, you know? Like, there are just a million different paths, and the one that you're on right now may not be optimal for you.
Or you might have, you know, been there, done that already. I think that's what's really helpful about the 4-Hour Workweek book inspired a lot of people, because Tim was writing about here's a different way you could approach life. You know, whether it's the mini retirements, or just like even tiny stories about the family that sold their house and traveled the world on a sailboat for an entire year. And the total cost to live on a boat for a whole year and sail the world was $18,000. Just even just hearing that something like that is a possibility makes you go, whoa, like, is that what I want? I could do that. And even just knowing that you could makes you question, do I want to or not? I kind of want to. Do I want to badly enough to give up this house? Maybe not. Maybe therefore I actually value comfort more than sailing. I just, yeah, these things make you question your values. But yeah, it's always wonderful to be presented with other options. That's what explorers do for us, right? So say 200 years ago, there were places on the map that we just really didn't know what was there yet. And so explorers were thought of as like physical explorers, you know, with the hat and the little thing, and they'd go off into the darkest Peru and explore places that hadn't been explored yet. And then they'd come back and draw the maps and report to us about what's there. But now that we know what's everywhere physically in the world, I think we still need explorers that are like life explorers, to like go explore what can be done with a life and show it to us. You know, show us places on the map of possibilities that we didn't know were there.
Hmm. Well,
yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a place to wrap up.
Yeah, good place to wrap up.
It was really surprising to me how many parallels in this conversation there have been to so many of the areas we found ourselves talking about, the sense-making, the sovereignty, the shadow work, stoicism, all of this stuff. And it's just like, it's really cool to see someone really in a different way, a different kind of place in life, coming to a lot of the same conclusions from their own reflections.
Well, that's, you know, I've done basically no interviews for the last almost 4 years now. And when you guys asked, even I said it on my blog recently, like, oh, I'm starting to feel open to the idea. So people started asking and I still kept saying no. And then I got you guys asked and I was like, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. You guys are cool.
That was weird.
We're going to have a good conversation. Yeah. And I love this conversation. So thank you.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you too.
It was awesome to finally get that yes to talk to you. Yeah. It's I don't know how to put it into words, but you're weird. And that's
good.
Thank you. It's cool.
The ultimate compliment.
Yeah, it's like the way that you phrase things and the way that you do things is just very, in some ways, very counter to how other people do things. But you seem to have so much joy about it, you know? Like, you're stoked about it and you're just like, yeah, trying these things. I don't know. There's just, it's, the tone of this interview was really different than a lot of our other interviews. And I like that.
Yeah.
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 Cool. So cool. Yeah. Thank you for your time.
And yeah, anybody who listened all the way to the end, go to my site at sivers.org and send me an email and say hello. I still reply to every email and I enjoy it. I like hearing from strangers around the world. It's fun.
Cool.
Cool. Awesome.
Hey everyone, just a reminder that the registration for our membership area closes on the 23rd of this month. If you want to check it out, get access to the courses and the group calls and any other events and workshops that we're doing. We've got a lot of them coming up. You can check that out by going to members.futurethinkers.org. Thanks for listening to our interview with Derek Sivers. You can get all the links and show notes at futurethinkers.org/117 and stay tuned until the next episode.
The brand new Future Thinkers members portal is now live. Develop your sovereignty and self-knowledge with our in-depth courses, get access to our weekly sense-making calls, join the Q&As with past podcast guests, and much more. Become a Future Thinkers member today at futurethinkers.org/members. To stay up to date with new episodes, subscribe to Future Thinkers on your favorite platform. And leave us a review or a like. It really helps out the show. And don't forget to share this episode on social media. Enter the Future Thinkers giveaway and win our brand new community membership, including in-depth courses, private calls, and more, as well as a supply of Qualia, a complete cognitive upgrade for your brain. To enter the contest, simply go to futurethinkers.org/giveaway and sign up for our mailing list to instantly get our 50-page guide on how to adapt to the future. There are many ways to increase your chances of winning. Enter the competition today.
This episode is brought to you by Qualia, a nootropic supplement that helps support mental performance and mood. To get 10% off, use the code FUTURE at checkout. And to learn more about neurohacking, visit futurethinkers.org/neuro.